Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
I mean, I had so much hope when they're like, yeah, Ben Affleck's going to be our guy. He's going to direct the Batman film. Don't even start on me about the Batman plots. Shut it.
There's no Batman film.
Shut up! God!
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we do everything from the big screen to the back bends and everything in between. I am the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall, along with me today, Paul Klotz.
So, why do you sound like you're going to the bathroom every time you do that?
Because that's how you get energy in the radio business, man. Didn't you know that?
I didn't realize you were a morning shock jock.
I'm going to assume it's the same reason that Austin looks pained in all of his pictures.
That, my friends, is Chris Wisdom bringing the wit and the humor. And the subtle references to other shows on the network. So, how you guys been this week? You have any... You know, let's do this. I kind of like this from Pokemon Go, even though it's very specific to a game. We won't have to do it every time. But I do like catching up with you guys. Is there something cool you've played or watched this week?
You know what? I finally caught up on American Gods.
I haven't even started it. Is that worth watching?
It is so very good. It is awesome. I'm so mad that I didn't read the book when it came out, because I remember reading the synopsis for the book when it first came out. I was like, this sounds cool, and I'll put it on my list, and I never got to it. And now I need to go devour that book now.
So. Yeah, it's... Yeah, American Gods is the business, man.
Cool. What about you, Klotz? You played something, read something, did something fun?
I've been dragged kicking and screaming into playing a bit of Future Fight again.
Yeah, me too.
There was an old a group of people who used to play from the Helicarrier. That was our show. Marvel Avengers Alliance together. The Mug group, Mark Twigg was from the Mug group. They used to be big supporters of the show. A bunch of them kind of convinced me to check it out again, and they used to be big supporters of the show. So I dove back in. Now, Mark lied to me, because he told me that it's not as grindy as it was 10 months ago, the last time I played, and it's still real freaking grindy. But the thing about Future Fight is they give you a bunch, like, if you don't play for X amount of time, they're come on back. First one's free. Come on back.
They gave me a ton of stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to stick with it in the long term, but I'm happy to kind of poke around again. The big thing for Future Fight right now is somehow they signed a pact with the devil or something, because they have X-Men in the game.
Yeah.
I saw those advertisements a few weeks ago, and I almost got sucked back in, but I haven't jumped in yet.
Yeah, so there's a whole epic quest based around that, which is pretty cool. They give you Wolverine right off the bat, which is sweet.
Why'd you tell me that?
So I'm a little lost, to be honest, in all this stuff. I'm not sure. Is that the event quest? Because they've changed it so much since I played, and there's so much for me to catch up on. I have contacted Bug many times.
The event quest is for something X-Men related that we don't really know about yet, but like they showed Absorbing Man and Titania coming up, and they're going to get released, and people are speculating that that might mean Fear itself, and we all know how good that was for
Avengers Alliance. Good. Mm-hmm.
I said that a little sarcastically, just because of how much the Worthy kind of destroyed the meta.
They did, but it's still a fun story, and it was really good.
Yeah, those are really cool characters to play around with too. So if they are loyal to the source material, where they use the same characters turning into the same Worthy characters, it'll be really cool, because anybody who played Avengers Alliance didn't get a chance to play the actual comic versions. Though there are going to be a few that are going to be notably absent, namely Angrier, who is Thing. Because there's no Fantastic Four in that game, and they're not going to have them, because Fantastic Four is actually getting pulled from everything, apparently.
Yeah. I thought they were getting, like, they're after they get pulled, they won't be available, but if you have them, I thought that you get to keep them.
Well, they're not in the game, so.
Well, yeah, they're not in Future Fight, but they're getting pulled from a couple of the other games that have them.
Oh, okay. Was it Heroes? Is that what the...
Hero, yeah, you got to keep them if you had them, but you couldn't buy them again. But even still, that just means that they're never going to get any more, you know what I mean? Those are dead characters, essentially. Like, as good as they are that day is the best they'll ever be.
Yeah.
Because they'll never revisit them or anything because they don't have the licensing anymore.
Speaking of, because we do want to keep this part short because we're, you know, we can do it later too. But I've been playing Omega. What is that? Marvel Heroes Omega on the Xbox One. And I did dabble in it some because of Klotz and how much he talked about it before when we were doing the other show. I dabbled with it on the laptop, but I've grown to be non-computer guy with my life. I love computers. I love computer games. But it's easier for me to grab a controller on my Xbox to play for an hour than it is to do the computer thing. Omega is definitely different.
Controllers for PCs, right?
No, it's not about the controller. It's about the setup, like where it is. And anyway, I'm probably just lying to myself. It doesn't matter. I play on the Xbox One. And I got to tell you, the fun part that I discovered about this, jumping in, brand new game, working through it, trying to get stuff. They've definitely changed the cost on things, so on and so forth. But my son wanted to play. And I'm like, well, let's see what happens. I didn't know if it's one player or two, or if it's one or co-op or any of that stuff. Hit a button, see what happens. Well, sure enough, it lets him log into his profile because I already had him a profile set up on my box. And he jumps right in. Cool. We're playing side by side co-op. That makes it a whole different game. It's a lot more fun. And we're sharing the resources. So it didn't matter if I picked up his character's item. We have now it does make you go through items or your swords faster, but you share the space. So he could have his items and it kept all the gold across the board for us. It was non-competitive. And I really loved that. And he really loved that. So it's going to be a new game for us to play together. It's going to be fun. So if you haven't played before, I recommend getting on a console and playing it. If, like Klotz, you've invested a lot of time and money on the Steam version, you're going to want to stay there because there is no way to connect that account at this time. You will start over from scratch in the story. And that's just how that goes. So, going on into the show now, and I think that was cool. Thanks for sharing because I didn't know about American Gods. I hadn't heard anybody watch. I know somebody watched it, but nobody. I haven't told anybody who's watched it. So thanks, Chris, for that.
And I watched the first two episodes and I stopped Preacher. Like I'm picking back up on Preacher now. Now that I'm caught up on American Gods, but yeah, I stopped cold.
Reversed. I'm all caught up on Preacher, and it's phenomenal this season. So, check it out. Thought sound like you were going to say something.
Yeah, I'll say this. American Gods only has 8 episodes.
I'm done then.
Possibly, yeah. So there, you know, and it's done. The season's done. I heard a rumor from a friend yesterday that apparently Neil Gaiman said that we're looking to get like at least 5 seasons of content out of this first book.
Oh, good.
So now that could go either way because not a lot has happened yet in the first season as far as moving the overall story forward. A lot of setting up the world and everything and setting up the ideas and the characters, which is fantastic. There's the character work in the show and in the book itself is incredible. It's super fun. But yeah, so it looks like as long as it keeps pulling numbers, it's got a secure future for a few years where we're going to see this amazing content. But some really great performances, and it is, yeah. If they can maintain quality like they have so far, it's going to be one of the best shows ever.
And what channel or streaming service is this found on?
It's on Stars.
Okay.
So you can stream it through Amazon if you have a Star subscription through Amazon. Or you can, if you have Stars through your normal television.
Stars has an app you can get through iTunes or whatever else and pay directly if you want to do that, those kind of things. Cool. All right. So this I missed. I need to check the website more for comments. Tony Mass posted this a little while ago after we did the Wonder Woman review episode. So he has two slight nitpicks with our review. And this was Tony P. Henderson and Casey Straws was with me for that one. Says number one, the comparison. Oh no, it was
Travis,
not Casey. It was Travis and Tony. So yeah, the comparison. It doesn't matter. It's two guys and me. I don't remember who was there. We're gonna do this. The comparison that Travis makes between Captain America: The First Avenger and Wonder Woman can also be made about Star Wars. a hero, Luke, that has an extraordinary power of the Force. He sets off into the world consumed by war to stop a German, okay, maybe not German, but their soldiers were stormtroopers, scientist, Sith, and a rogue general, Moff, from unleashing terrible weapon, the Death Star, that can change the course of the war, kill allies, the rebels. Along the way, our heroes pick up diverse group of ragtag fighters, Obi-Wan, Han, Chewie, you got it, who help reach the mission objectives. In the end, they destroy the villain, Tarkin, before a massive plane, the Death Star, carrying weapons can kill a bunch of innocent people. Oh, wait, they actually did kill people, showing you just how devastating the weapon is. Then your hero dies at the end, and you've got the mentor, Obi-Wan. No, all the mentors die also. You've got the love interest, sort of, that gets creepy later in movies. Is Steve really hitting on his old girlfriend's grandniece? to be fair, they are very similar. So he's right, because Travis was like, Wonder Woman is exactly like Captain America. I was like, okay, you know, if you say so, man. So that, he said it could be made about Star Wars there. So fair enough point. Guys, if you want to address that, we'll do that, and then we'll move on to the next point.
That's one of those criticisms that I've heard levied at Wonder Woman several times, is that, oh, they're just redoing Captain America. And, well, no, they're not. They just, similar circumstances, but you can't just say that about every time there's a similarity between movies. You can't just say, oh, well, they're just
redoing Batman. There's a lot of origin stories that are similar.
Yeah.
I mean, they just are. Across DC and Marvel. I mean,
otherwise you would just say that every Disney movie is the same because somebody's parents died at the beginning of the movie, you know?
Well, you know, it's not a Disney movie unless they do.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Star Wars, before Disney bought it, Star Wars was a Disney film because his parents supposedly were dead, and then his uncle and aunt died at the beginning of the film. It had Disney written all over it back in 1977.
Barbecue.
So. Did you call me barbecue?
No, I was talking about Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Okay. I got you.
Barbecue.
Barbecue. All right, Tony's second point is the IMDb description of Steve Trevor, because I read that during the review going, they sound like that did not come from the movie, because we were trying to make sure we hadn't missed where they said he was an American, and apparently I did miss where they said he was American on loan or something, because he had no English accent, right, when everybody else did. So the IMDb description of Steve Trevor was about the 70s TV series, not the movie. Well, that doesn't make sense. The description of Steven being an Air Force, there was no Air Force in World War I or even World War II for that matter. If there was, it was the Army Air Corps. As a pilot in the 40s, blah, blah, blah. That wasn't necessarily from the comics, but it was absolutely the description for the character from the Linda Carter Wonder Woman TV show. Just giving you guys trouble. Thanks for the show. You clarified. The second point clarified why IMD was so weird about the Steve Trevor character, and that makes a whole lot of sense. But why wouldn't they have an updated? Why wouldn't you have an updated Steven Trevor bio on IMDb? People really deep dive these things. We don't deep dive that much, but there are fans who want to know everything about every character in the movie. Why wouldn't you have an updated description on IMDb? You know?
Mm.
No. So, all right. Thanks, Tony, for doing that. You can go to giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel and leave your comments there, but it might be a few months before we get to it. Because I forget to check the comments. And I responded back to him there and apologized about, you know, not checking it. It's all on me. So moving on. Jungle Cruise. What the hell is Jungle Cruise?
Jungle Cruise is what the former director of Suicide Squad 2 has decided to do.
Okay.
Former second director of Suicide Squad 2.
I can't even say that name.
You're up, Paul.
All right.
No.
Nope.
Yeah, you can just look at the link. It's definitely... It sounds French to me, but I don't know.
I believe Jean Collet
Sarah.
Yeah. That's better than I would have done. 5 points to Collet.
I probably butchered that, so I apologize to any French speaking.
So anyway, but I think the big takeaway for me off this article is that we have another DCEU director walking away from a WB project. He is going on this Jungle Cruise movie with which is starring Dwayne Johnson. So,
well, this sounds like that movie with Ice Cube and J-Lo, Anaconda.
Yeah, maybe.
Man, that's a reaching real far back because that was.
Oh, dude, that was my jam when it came out. I loved the stupid cheesy movies.
Yeah,
with
but that
rap stars
was when nobody knew who J-Lo was yet. You know what I mean? Like that was like her breaking out.
No, she was in the movie with Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. No, yeah, Cheers guy. Yeah, was that Woody Harrelson?
Yeah.
Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson, and she was a love interest. It was a heist film. Is the first thing I saw her in, I think.
And
of course, she's a Living Color, but
and it made such an impact that you remember the name.
I watched everything Wesley Snipes, man. It all kind of blurs together after a point. I liked it, but it all does blur together. I'll be honest. So anyway, that was a reach. So the real takeaway is he's not going to do, or that could be a she, I guess. They are not going to do Suicide Squad 2. So do we have any more news other than just the walk away to discuss about Suicide Squad 2?
No, not at this point. So
let's save. I'm gonna put a note in the second half because I saw a comment you made, Chris. I think it was you, Chris, that was worth discussing about losing directors. So I'm gonna make a note about losing directors, and we can discuss that. I think that'll be our talking point there. So then, Shazam. Now I've already heard a little bits of this, so I'll let you take over here. But basically, there was gonna be a big Black Adam push, maybe even a Black Adam solo film, and now. That's kind of been backburnered.
Well, okay, so when it was announced that The Rock was going to be Black Adam, the hype, I think the hype surrounding Shazam got bigger than they expected because it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson, A, and this character seems perfect for him. I mean, if there was a super an anti-hero villain that was The Rock with superpowers, it's Black Adam. Yep. The role was made for him, and I think that WB doesn't know how to do the project and put Shazam in the limelight while having The Rock as the villain. And honestly, I think this is a misstep. So they've since announced Geoff Johns has come back and he's announced and said that Black Adam and The Rock will not be in the Shazam movie. So we're going to have a Shazam movie, which the director has come out and he said it's going to be a different tone. Than any of the other DCEU movies coming out. It's going to be more lighthearted and upbeat because this is all about Billy Batson, you know, a kid becoming Superman, getting those superpowers, and how great would that be when you're young and you have those powers and do the things that you can do.
Yeah.
My problem is twofold with this, is I wonder if that direction is far too drastic. I mean, we have time. This movie isn't going to come out until like 2019, but I wonder if that change in tone isn't too drastic and will give people whiplash to go from this bleak universe that we've been introduced to Saccharine Sweet.
Well, if they do it Saccharine Sweet, yes. If they do it like Stranger Things.
Yeah, but that description that he just gave versus what we've already gotten,
So it's not Geoff Johns that said it, it's the director.
No, this is the director that's saying it. Okay. Geoff Johns came out and confirmed that The Rock and Black Adam will not be in the movie. The misstep in that portion that I think is I think they should not be doing a Shazam movie. They should be doing a Black Adam movie and introducing Shazam
that way. Yeah.
I think that's where they should go because
that'd be awesome, man. Flip the script.
Exactly. And that's where they could do one of those things that they so desperately want to do, separating themselves from the MCU. Do it that way. Introduce. It's the same with Mads Mikkelsen last week, right? It was last week or early this week, said that he wants to play Doctor Doom. And he's one of those characters that you don't have to have the Fantastic Four in a movie with Doctor Doom. Doctor Doom can carry his own movie, just like Black Adam could carry his own movie. Because when you're talking about rulers of a country, there's a lot of other things that you can do.
Yeah.
And you can introduce characters in those movies to be their foil, and then you're looking at it from the villain's point of view, or you know, pseudo villain, I guess is what we would say.
That would be a bold flick to make, man.
Oh.
To do that movie from Doom as the protagonist's perspective, and seeing him make all his fatal flaws, like see his pride and everything get in the way of what he's trying to accomplish. Yeah, absolutely. That would be
incredible. Dude, Wolf of Wall Street-esque almost. The way you watch the character become Well, he was never a great guy. Did you guys see The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
I did. That's why I'm very confused by what you're trying to say. But
I would think more like Scarface, but...
Yeah, okay. It's been a long time since I've seen Scarface.
For me, probably The Godfather would be closer to when you're talking...
Anyway, sorry. I thought about saying some things to start a fight, and I decided not to. But no, my point is, what we're saying, yeah, follow the villain, and you kind of root for the bad guy. Or Heat. For me, Heat was one of the best movies. Because I'm like, I'm rooting for the bad guys until they're obliterating the cops. And like, holy crap, I feel like I'm rooting for the wrong team, but I'm rooting for both. I don't know. Great, great storytelling in that movie for me. Yeah, dude, that would have been so cool. Have they already cast Billy Batson?
Not yet. Last I knew, they had not yet.
So what do you think about the lead kid from Stranger Things? Clot says no.
I mean, the thing is, they're jamming that kid into everything else they can right now.
Are they really?
Well, he's in the It movie.
See, I'm not going to watch that. I haven't seen anything about that, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's the weird thing about that casting decision for the It movie is, like, it's so in the vein of Stranger Things where I'm like, all right, it makes sense, but it's also, like...
Ham-fisted?
Yeah, now you're just transferring a character, essentially, from a successful show into a, you know, a remake of a classic film.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I can't think of a specific child actor that jumps out to me, but, yeah.
Yeah. Now, as far as, so what I do know about Shazam, I've read some of the stuff. I've seen some of the animated features that he's in. Shazam still is a kid, just with super adult body, super powers, all that jazz, but still that kid inside. Like, similar kind of to Tom Hanks Big. I think The Rock could be Shazam. When I first heard it, I was like, he plays great as an innocent-minded, childlike person, but he's got the body for it. He's got the adultness for it. And then they said Black Adam, which I agree with you. Black Adam is Nick Fury to Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, it's just born for the role. Of course, the new Nick Fury was built off of Sam Jackson anyway. But yeah, I still think you could cast Rock as Shazam and have it work really well.
I think you could. I think where The Rock would excel in that role is being that child in the grown-up body.
Yeah.
But I feel like they would be too tempted to go full-on comedic with it. And not that I have a problem with The Rock doing comedy, but we've seen it. We've seen it. So now let me see him be that bad guy.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. Tooth Fairy was a little too comic. What was the football one where he had the daughter? Was that the Tooth Fairy?
Yeah, that was the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah, it was a little too much glitter and cheesiness. So, yeah, but we'll see more of The Rock somewhere. And hopefully, I mean, with Jeff Johns attached, he'll do well.
It's not like he's not working like crazy right now. He's in everything.
Yeah, I know. All right, so for a second, I said, who? Then, oh, yeah. So one of the most well-known faces and sometimes little-known names, apparently, as he does in most Ron Howard films, Clint Howard is going to show up in Han Solo movie. What, Klotz, how do you feel about that?
I literally don't care. I'm not negative about it. It's just like,
no, yeah,
I
it's
don't
a neutral.
See that as newsworthy. He puts him in everything. What?
Yeah,
it's like Sean Gunn, and you know his brother. You know what I mean? It's like
James Gunn. Who's Sean Gunn's brother? Is it James Gunn?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I didn't realize that.
Like,
I didn't assume because they had the same last name. They didn't mean crap.
He's
in
every James Gunn movie. Every
but
single
I've only
one
seen
of them.
Guardians of James Gunn. I haven't seen other things James Gunn's done.
It's always in interviews and stuff. Like, it's all over the place. They're always talking about how. Ugh.
Why would you watch interviews? Just watch the movie and enjoy yourself.
Don't you go changing, Charles.
Did you really just say, why would you watch interviews on a panel show that occasionally conducts interviews?
But you listen to us. You don't watch it.
You know, you should run for president of the United States of America.
I got voted for this last election, just so you know, sir.
You voted for yourself, didn't you?
No, I didn't vote. That's a bunch of crap. I don't get a vote. It's stupid. But a friend of mine who was frustrated with the system wrote me in as a legitimate vote. So I got one vote in the state of Rhode Island for president last time. So not enough to take Trump down, unfortunately. Sorry, guys. I tried. So anyway, Chris.
There's still hope for 2020.
Chris, what do you think, man?
The reason I brought this was not necessarily because it's super newsworthy, but I just kind of wanted to see what everybody thought, how they thought he would be put in, how surreptitiously he'd be slid in. Like, is this going to be George Lucas sticking NSYNC into the battle scene of the Clone Wars? Or is this... I put Dr. Evazan out to the side because I think that would be perfect and you wouldn't require a lot of makeup. Not to be too catty about poor Clint Howard, but... For those of you that don't know, that's the guy from the cantina in Star Wars when it says, "Hey, my friend doesn't like you very much." Yeah.
Well, to be honest, I'm literally not being funny about it. I thought I had seen, obviously, a fake post. If I really did see something that he had died, like that, that Clint Howard had passed away, and you know you recognize him because he's always in all these films as a side character or blah blah blah.
Seems like he had one of those death hoaxes within the last couple of years.
Probably. Because when I saw this, my first thought was like, didn't he die? But no, yeah, obviously not.
Hey, Disney has proved how many people they can bring back from the dead, dude.
Oh! I kind of want to say too soon, but you're absolutely spot on with that. So, now, what's this about Domino?
So Ryan Reynolds tweeted a promotional shot of the actress who's playing Domino doing the lay down on her side in front of the fireplace pose that he did as Deadpool. And it's a woman of color. And there's some nerds on the internet who are really upset about that. Probably at least in part because Domino's kind of well known for having really pale skin.
Yeah.
But that
mean they won't put white makeup, not white face, but like obvious pale makeup because that's her character.
So in the comics, Domino is characterized by the really pale skin, but then the dark patch over her one eye. In this promotional shot, she's got, you know, a normal woman of color skin, and then she's got a weird like white patch thing going around the same eye. So I don't know if that was meant to be. I mean, it's entirely possible it was meant to enrage people for the PR alone. But yeah.
Well, it is Deadpool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I put it in the show notes as Irma Gerd, she's blackish. Because that's really like the response that some people have had. Honestly, I don't really care. You know what I mean? Like, as long as, you know, the character is great in the film, I have faith, but I just figured we'd throw it out there since we mention it every time some folks get really, really upset about stuff like this.
Yeah, I think the only problem that I had is just the hair, like, and that's mm-hmm. and that's it. I don't when you're a mercenary, I don't know that a fro to that degree is conducive to, but I mean that's such a tiny nitpick. If they make it work, they make it work.
We don't know if that's like full get up for how she's going to appear in the film,
and that's true too. That's
yeah. I feel like it was more of a casting announcement than anything, and people kind of took that as like that's definitely going to be the way she looks in the film. I don't know that that's the case. I actually feel like the weird eye patch thing she's got going on is a bit of a hint to that like, hey, this isn't, you know, nothing's finalized here. Though it'll be really funny if a person of color is in whiteface in Deadpool. Because that'll give some ammunition to a certain crowd. Which I want to make it very clear that we don't condone that crowd. Mm-hmm. But that crowd will say some really stupid and funny stuff if they're given that ammunition. And that I do kind of look forward to. So
just bring your popcorn.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. I'm with you. Oddly enough, I never really care much if they change the look of a hero, because typically that's not what defines the hero. And the costuming is actually pretty close. I'd recognize her. But the fro does throw me off a little bit. If I had just seen this without any context, I'd have been like, who's that? Because the patch, the eye patch tells me it's kind of Domino-esque, right? And the outfit absolutely doesn't, the fact that it's Deadpool does. But it's like, what's with the hair, man? You know, she just has a very distinctive haircut. It's very soccer mom meets goth girl. So I'm not opposed to it, but that part, I'm with Chris on this one. It's like, it's a little different. Don't care if she's black or white, honestly. I think she's a phenomenal actress.
I'm sure they picked someone who's right for the job.
You know, yeah.
I have confidence in that.
I mean, come on, internet bros. It's Ryan Reynolds. He has not done wrong yet as far as Deadpool is concerned. So get over it. I don't know. All right. So we've had the gauntlet thrown down by Botched about how they have the best breaks. And according to Paul Klutz, unless you just like buying underwear from, you know, myunderwear.com or whatever it is over and over again, they might be winning that. But stay tuned. Let's roll the dice. Please be Flo from Progressive, because that's better than the Botched Patreon crap that they try to shill down your throat all the time. So check it out. Let's see who wins. Come back after the break and tell us. And we're back. I hope you enjoyed that. Because, man, we found one that was Daddy, how are babies made? And we just laughed and laughed. And maybe you heard that one and laughed, too.
I feel like we should point out that we're talking about the ads themselves that run
themselves,
the middle of the show. Because thus far, you've not made that clear. You're just rambling.
Well, I said breaks. You're right. I thought breaks was clear enough. Maybe not.
And we all know we've had a great track record with the random ads that get assigned to our show.
Man, those political ones. That was a bad day for everybody all the way around. You know what else is a bad day for everybody? Just the fact that Nintendo's making the SNES Classic. That's just bad juju, apparently. Walmart had issues. Now Nintendo is putting out, I can even say with a straight face, but they're like, no, really, we're going to make a bunch of these and everybody will have one. Whatever, man. I love that Klotz. I think Chris Wisdom put it. I was like, should we trust him? Klotz is like, nope. And everybody behind him, including me, was like, no, never in a million years do you listen to that crap.
I literally said meh. And I was like, but they have every opportunity to try to earn my trust back, but they don't have it. You know what I mean? So yeah, no, I mean, we've talked about this at length. I do think that this is pretty, this is either a sign that they're cognizant of the fact that the community that supports them is getting a little tired of the short runs. Cause I've hit some social media for this topic, like when it was announced and everything. And I saw like the Reddit threads and stuff, and people were like, listen, I love Nintendo, but they keep doing this, like the short runs and everything. So this better be legitimate. Cause you know what I mean? And there were thousands of comments on that Reddit thread. Like some Reddit threads get a couple dozen or a couple hundred. This one was like 5,000-6,000 comments deep. There are a lot of people chiming in. So, and that's pretty indicative of like a lot of people who care about an issue. You know, if a Reddit thread blows up and gets a lot of traffic like that. This is a good move, you know, by all means, Nintendo, please make enough. But I think you should consider maybe re-releasing the NES Classic, because there's clearly an audience for that as well. And that's the thing, like, to give them an idea, maybe. So I get that, like, when we talked about this before, I was like, you know, I get that maybe the issue is that the, you know, whatever manufacturing window they had was closed. And they had the SNES Classic in the pipeline as well. Probably uses the same facility since it's a similar product and everything. So how about going forward, why don't you like start maybe staggering or something? Like, why don't you do the NES Classics again next year or something? Or when you've got the, you know, the factory space again, do some runs of the NES Classic, you know, because there's clearly still people who want to buy this stuff. So, I mean,
it is currently listed on Amazon for $299.
Well, there was, well, yeah. yeah. That's because demand has dropped. I mean, a lot of people have either given up or finally got it. You know, the other thing is, though, I saw a similar thread about it where GameStop was giving away, they were doing a promotion on their website where they were giving away 100 NES Classics, and people were pissed. Like, really pissed. Because they were like, what the hell? Like, clearly that means GameStop's been sitting on 100 of these for who knows how long. And it probably what happened is they couldn't sell them through whatever. And then there was all kinds of conspiracy, like, oh, all the quote-unquote scalpers probably just sold in the GameStop. And it's like, no.
Now, GameStop is going to pay under the price. GameStop, they're not going to pay over.
GameStop has almost certainly been allocated these units and has been sitting on them because of how insane everything was. I mean, and it's not that I can blame them, but, like, it was not good timing for them to be like, oh, so we're going to give a whole bunch of these away. I think they probably could have gotten away with just being like, hey, we're gonna give away several of these, not 100 exactly of these.
But at the end of the day, it's GameStop, and if there's one thing that GameStop has proven over the years is they don't give a F about your opinion, you're gonna give them their money.
Yeah.
Shut up and buy these games.
Yeah, we've covered that story before, I think, early on in this show.
Oh, these games all came out within the last 2 months, and you want to trade all five of them in, I'll give you $10.50.
Yeah. Yep. $12.20 if you want store credit.
Yeah. Oh, and if you're a Power Up member, whatever the hell it's called,
yeah,
you get 30% extra sometimes.
Now, Chris, I understand that you used to work for like KB Toys and stuff. You advocate actually buying these and then reselling them on the internet, the SNES Classics.
Yeah.
He's a big fan of that practice.
I told him off the air one day, I was like, you guys know, I'm actually on the list. I'm going to buy one of these just so I can turn around and resell it. And it was just like crickets from Chris's side. Klaus just was laughing and laughing. Chris is like, you know, I think he did like 100 push-ups just to get the energy out. And it was hilarious. Okay, so let's talk about losing directors. So one of you guys, it may have been somebody in our esteemed Giant Size Team Up Network group because it was in the host chat, but I feel like Chris said this about it seems like now this problem is growing bigger. Because I brought up the thing. Well, in the past, we couldn't really follow how a movie was made, right? Just little tidbits, an article here in a magazine, you know, something there. And we wouldn't necessarily know there's been three directors on this movie, or we wouldn't know the problems. We wouldn't know this. Or are we blowing it out of proportion that now it's the internet, and the second anything happens, it's on Twitter and Facebook, and we all know. And are we blowing out of proportion? And this is the second director to leave. I know, no. I'm just setting up the conversation. Shut up. This is the second director to leave, and the comment was not that we're worried about DCEU. The comment was not about the tragedies that are befalling the movies, and we're going to get another. This looks like it's going to be a horrible step for DC to move forward and all that. The comment actually was great. It was, this points to no matter what Warner Brothers says about giving directors freedom and making partnerships with directors long term, they're really, it indicates that they're really about, you're going to shoot it our way no matter what. And that's why directors are leaving. Was that you, Chris, that said that?
I don't remember saying that.
Well, that's still a great thing to discuss, right?
Yeah.
So this does indicate, or let me phrase it as a question, allow you guys to take it where you want to go. Do you think it indicates that we keep losing director after director with Warner Brothers and the comic book world, the DCEU? Does it indicate that no matter what they say, that they're absolutely trying to control every step, and no good director is going to want that?
Okay, so I feel like there's a couple different ways this scenario goes down. So we have recent examples with Ant-Man, for example. That was a situation where the director... Okay, we know that Disney absolutely is what you're saying right now, that they want you to play ball their way. They want you to bring your expertise and everything to the table, but they really want you to play ball their way. They're like, we know how to make these movies now. You know what I mean? And if you can't make them that way, you can't be here, you know, and that's what we're seeing, what we saw a little bit with Ant-Man and what we saw with, which actually worked out really well because that let him go do Baby Driver, which was amazing. So we can really be thankful that that whole situation went the way
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard great.
And Ant-Man was good too, so it was like, it was a win-win. Baby Driver, well, you got to see Baby Driver, dude. You live in Atlanta. It's
I know. He's all over Atlanta. I just haven't had a chance to go see it.
But, and then, you know, with the Han Solo flick, you know, that's a case of a couple of directors that are way out of their depth and a company that cannot allow them to try to find their way. I mean, they even gave them, I mean, how much time? You know what I mean? In the case of DC, and I think I might have been the one who said what you were kind of hinting at, is I read the situation as DC doesn't have its house in order. They don't have a clear creative direction in the way that Marvel has or the way that a couple other companies have in the past. They, you know, so there's no cohesive vision here, and things are inconsistent. I mean, it isn't just losing the director. It's also losing Dwayne Johnson on, you know, playing the part in Shazam. And I mean, I know they're still looking to give him another film, but he jumped immediately to another opportunity, you know? And it's like, so what I feel like is Warner Brothers really doesn't know what they're doing right now. They're really out of their depth. Even with Johns at the helm, like, they don't seem to be able to get the reins on it right now. And go ahead, Chris.
I think that what we talked about last week was Zack Snyder being out. I really feel like that lends to Jeff being able to get his arms around this a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
That's one of those that I, there's no way that I can see the last few years and how dug in Zack was and his position on the DCEU not having multiple points of contention with Geoff Johns and the future of the DCEU. Mm-hmm. And that was just one roadblock that's now gone.
And that might be what this is too, is that this is, maybe we're seeing unification of the vision, which is something that had to happen. It's just hard to tell until we get a film that comes out of the product of that. I think Justice League will be very telling as to where we're going in the future. Especially because it really, I mean, they tried to downplay it at first, but it really sounds like Whedon is really overhauling the movie in a big way. And I trust his vision because Avengers, it's a pretty good flick. I mean, I don't know that it'll hold up forever, but it was pretty solid. You know, it hit all the notes that it had to hit. So we'll see. You know, I'm optimistic. I really want to see Warner Brothers get it together. I want to see these DC films become cohesive and good because they've already done that before. I mean, the Nolan trilogy, now the Nolan trilogy being an example of a director getting like essentially carte blanche, you know what I mean? Like, he was really allowed to do it his way. That was very apparent. Maybe not so much with the third film because that was kind of a mess, but maybe actually that might be his problem as well. That might have been all him, but in any case, yeah. So I see it's a complex situation. We haven't seen the product of any shakeup yet. I think that'll be very telling, and I think Justice League will be a good indicator of where it's going. But I'd love to see them pull it together and have it be cohesive again.
Yeah, I definitely would too. I find it interesting because I brought this up with a few friends, and they're like, "Well, the MCU has had its director troubles too." And really, if you look at it, you're talking two films. You're talking Ant-Man and you're talking Thor Ragnarok. What we went through, is Thor the third? The third?
Yes, the third Thor, yes.
No. Ragnarok is, it's the third director. Is Thor, he's the third director that was linked to it. Because I believe Patty Jenkins was the second.
I thought you misspoke. You said Thor. I thought you were trying to say, is it the third Thor? No. Sorry.
But yeah, because I think Patty Jenkins was attached as the second director. I can't remember who the first choice was. So Ant-Man and Thor Ragnarok, where, you know, you're on, what, the second or third director for Flash. You're on the second director for Suicide Squad 2. With Zack Snyder being out, you're kind of in a pseudo second director for Justice League and then any other DCU projects. You know, Man of Steel 2 obviously is going to have a different director now. Batman, the Batman movies lost their director and gained a new one before they were even in production. Mm-hmm. This is just systemic of the DCEU is the difference.
And what is the common factor in all this? It is Warner Brothers. I mean, it is the studio heads there. And, you know, while we talked about the whole, I honestly, it slips my brain what her name is, but Patty Jenkins is the director. It's whoever's running the MCU right now. With Disney and all that, the Star Wars films, and the one who pulled the plug on
Kathleen Kennedy. That's Kathleen on the Star Kennedy. Wars side, yeah.
Star Wars side, yeah. Okay, it's on Star Wars side.
Yeah, she's
sorry. But she yeah. but the gist, the feeling, the energy there was like you were saying, Klaus, is no, we know how to make these movies, you gotta play in this ballpark, because that's her job, is to say, no, I have to put out the stuff the fans will love, and we have to do new innovative stuff while staying within this ballpark. And if you've ever been to a ballpark, you know they can be pretty big. A professional one's huge. You know, the minor league, you know, not minor leagues, but like little league ones are much smaller. But there's still a lot of room to play, right? So they seem to be giving directors free reign inside of a walled-in area, if you will. Whereas Warner Brothers feels like, I mean, I had so much hopes when they're like, yeah, Ben Affleck's going to be our guy. He's going to direct the Batman film. Don't even start on me about the Batman, Klotz. Shut it.
There is no Batman film.
Shut up! God! Weasley! See, I can't even come back on Weasley because that's so far gone now. Nobody cares about the Weasleys. They care about the Batman. Anyway, we make partnerships with our directors, and we get their – and then no. It really seems like you're full of crap. It feels like you're on your fourth or fifth wife, because everyone that you tricked into marrying you, you're like, yeah, no, we'll do it your way. And then they get married to you. You're like, nope, we're moving into my house. Oh, you're crap. And these are my rules. And they divorce you. And that's why you're on fifth wife / husband / director now. You know?
Yeah.
God, as long as we don't get a Punisher Warzone or that's what it was called, wasn't it? That was such a mess. I hated that film.
Yeah. That movie was pretty rough.
Oh, you finally got some Frank Castle gore though, didn't you?
But everything else was so bad I didn't care. It just was.
See, it's funny because if you look at Warzone and then you look at Dread, uh-huh. They both have a very similar premise, except Dread was how you do that movie well.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it seems like Dread had an effects budget that Warzone did not. I'm pretty sure they pulled out. They just pulled out straight Tekken 1 graphics in some of those scenes. It was bad.
Yeah, the rocket launcher scene. Oh my god, it hurts my brain. I'm pretty sure I turned off the movie after that. And I don't turn off movies. I let them, because most of the time, if I'm watching a film on streaming or Blu-ray or something, if it's not Blockbuster, like the family sitting down, I'm always doing something else. So it doesn't matter how bad the film is. It'll run in the background. I'm like, oh my God, that was crap. But that one, it got to that scene where he's doing parkour and he hits him with a rocket launcher that curves and chases him and then hits. Oh, and then the graphics were like 1980s. I drew some explosion stuff on top of him. Oh, I turned it off. I just couldn't do it.
Charles, yeah. While I don't mind you dating yourself, you really date this entire show when you say things like Blockbuster. Please don't do that anymore.
I don't mean Blockbuster to see. Hey, you know what? Klaus posted that. Klaus did it. You fuss at him. I don't mean the video store, but dude, that was an awesome post, by the way, Klaus. You don't understand. You kids don't understand how lit this was.
it was a picture of Blockbuster. Blockbuster,
yeah. Man, you could pick up a movie and a girl at the same time. It's awesome. It's a place to be.
It really, you know, let's get off on that tangent for just a moment here. It really was a really special moment in pop culture, right?
Yeah.
You know, the experience of going to the video store. And it wasn't always a Blockbuster, but Blockbusters were always the biggest and the cleanest and all that stuff. And they always had, like, the best selection. I'll never forget, like they you know, they had Nintendo games back in the 80s and the 90s, you know, like you could rent a system. Mm-hmm. Like I know people who rented a game system for like a week and played it through a game and then just brought it all back. And, you know, they're ready to go. I know people who rented games like week to week. Like they're like, oh yeah, well we finished this game and they'd go back and get another one. you know, obviously I wouldn't trade streaming to have that whole thing back, but it was a really amazing experience for what it kind of like the record store too. I mean, and the bookstore, like obviously like you got your Barnes and Nobles and you got, you know, like even Walmart's have CD sections and stuff. But I mean like legitimate bookstores, legitimate record stores, they're few and far between these days. And it kind of sucks because they have a great ambiance and they, you know, they're really a excellent experience. I think actually the comic shop, the few that are still around in most communities, is one of those last, you know, bastions of that kind of experience, that, you know, that mecca for your interests, you know what I mean? If you were into music, you went to the record store. If you were into
Sam Goody's, yep.
If you were into books, you go to a bookstore, you know.
Barnes and Nobles.
And it was cool because you could just meet people and have a conversation while you waited in line or something, or go check out, like, I used to like strolling through the aisles at a Blockbuster and being like, oh, look, a Jet Li movie I've never seen.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let me take this home. You know what I mean?
And you got that special membership. So during the week, you could get those off rack ones for free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like, I had a Hollywood Video in my community for a while. And it was like, you could get the ones where it was like, it was only like a buck to rent it for the night if you got it back the next day. It was awesome. Yeah. That stuff was great. Yeah. It's a little bit of a shame that with the advent of internet culture and everything, that those are just things we don't really have. Albeit there are, you know, there's replacements for that experience. I mean, you can go to online communities and still meet people and talk about all this stuff. You can listen to excellent podcasts by three knuckleheads who talk about this kind of stuff. And you should really tell all your friends about this particular podcast that you're listening to right now.
Absolutely.
And get them to come party with us. We'll be your Buttercup. I mean, we'll be your
Buttercup.
But yeah,
I'll say anything.
Charles will literally say anything.
That's true. And I'll hold the boombox up while I do it. That's cool.
I actually get that reference. So
yeah, thank you. The Beaner doesn't. Sorry.
Don't question my John Cusack knowledge.
And for those of you who are just offended, please email us.
You know, the title of that film is not instructional.
No.
Okay. You can't just say anything.
Email your hate mail to btp@johnsizeteamup.com. No, I love everybody. I love every race. We give Chris our time because anytime we get off on something that he feels like we're a little too white privileged about, he's like, hey, I'm half Hispanic, man. And, you know, so
he sets us straight.
I did not even pay attention to you saying that because you say it so often.
Oh, that is true. Don't you botch me here. Do not botch me here.
You guys should read the Rock God of Podcasting Twitter feed. It is amazing.
Oh, man. So, yeah, dude, that does take me back. The way I got my next generation consoles was to go and rent them. My first Super Nintendo was absolutely going to some local store that we had. It wasn't a chain or anything, but it was a local video store. And, you know, my parents plopped down $100 as a deposit, right? That they didn't have, but they wanted me to be able to have some fun. And I had a bunch of friends come over and we got Super Street Fighter and Super Nintendo. And that was the first. That was my introduction to Super Nintendo with Super Street Fighter 2. And man, those were the days. And then of course, then you saved up your allowance, right? You cut those yards, cut the grass, and saved up that money and went to the store because back then a new system was $200-$300, give or take.
Yeah,
it was great. And I played a lot of systems that way. And then I think it was. Maybe at the end of the Blockbuster, help me out here, Klaus, at the end of the Blockbuster reign, I think Xbox 360 might have been the last new console to come out. That sounds about right. They were not renting those at all.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
They're just too expensive.
Blockbuster, you watched a company that used to be king of the ring just slowly spend away its assets. You know what I mean? Like, you watched a company that used to have everything just slowly bleed out.
And it was, they made that mistake of, you know, scoffing at a new delivery system. And they thought there's no way Netflix will ever touch us. And then by the time they decided, okay, right. yeah, between GameFly and Netflix, we're getting touched. We should try our own at-home delivery service. It was too late. Yeah. They couldn't do it.
Yeah, I forget the exact number, but I want to say it was like 20 million. They had the option.
I was about to look it up. Yeah,
they had the option to buy Netflix at one point for like around 20 million, and they passed
because they were Netflix was struggling to find their market share. Yeah, 50 million. Because Blockbuster wanted to purchase. It was only DVD rental by mail then, and they wanted to buy it. And it was apparently it came down to like the wire. And the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, like, something doesn't feel right. You walked away. There's apparently there's a good documentary about it on Hulu, I think.
Of course it'd be on Hulu.
That's really funny.
It might be on Netflix, but I'm pretty sure it's on Hulu.
No, I'm willing to bet that chances are it's on Hulu. Well, you know, one of the interesting things about Netflix, now that it's been brought up, is I just saw an article yesterday about how apparently Netflix is drowning in debt right now. And they're just, because interest rates are pretty decent, they're just borrowing like crazy for all this growth that they're building, you know, with, because they really are, their strategy right now is to become the next HBO. Like, they are trying really hard to buy up as many shows as humanly possible.
They're fairly on point.
And apparently they're actually moving away from licensing other content. Like they're trying to downsize that side of their business where they're trying to get away from like licensing movies and stuff like that as much. And they're really trying to focus on getting the original content, quote unquote, original content onto their network. Now I will say that I felt like the article was a little sensational. Cause it said they had like 100 million or something like that and outstanding debt or whatnot. But the way it sounded is they were just, they're waiting for the bubble to burst. And I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen, but, it is interesting to note that they have become a completely different beast, and they're a company that seems to be able to respond to the changing needs of the marketplace. And so right now it looks like they're looking to transition away from being the, okay, well, we used to be the rental place, and then we were the streaming, the same kind of stuff place. Mm-hmm. Now we're the, you know, hosting original content and putting money behind original shows and everything place. And so, yeah, they're trying to build into something new. And I actually think that's probably not the worst thing.
And obviously the banks believe in what they're doing too, or they wouldn't give them the money.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at CinemaBlend. It says the debt is surpassed $20 billion. They're at a net worth of about $11 billion right now, which would be a business ratio roughly.
Well, $20 billion is a lot of money.
Oh God, yeah, it is.
I don't know why.
My stomach hurt a little bit.
I almost said $100 billion, and then I was like, "That's way too much." And then I was like, "Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know." $20 billion.
Well, anything with a B in it is a lot. So it could be $1 billion. That's a lot of debt. However, some of it's short term, some of it's long term.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, they're making money. But here's a question for us. I've always wondered, okay, I get you're getting new subscriptions every day, right? I know there was a hatred for them and people were calling to get off of them a little while back when they raised their rates. I feel like their rates are fair. I'm only a streaming guy currently. We did drop the DVD mailer thing because our life at the time took us away from watching DVDs to where it'd be valuable, right? We'd be, before when I worked at home all the time just sitting at a desk, I could crank out, you know, a TV series in a day. So I'd get the disc, and one every 10 discs was for the family, the rest of them were for me to watch while I was working. That changed and it became less financially sound to do that. But the streaming, man, in my opinion, if you're paying for cable, you need to get off of that. Or satellites, just as bad. Hulu and Netflix, I have not missed a beat. You like HBO? You can get it for $8.
There goes our future endorsement deal with Spectrum or...
Well, you know, if you want to talk about their broadband where you can download our show, check out Spectrum.
Please don't.
I don't. No, they're like... If I want to say Spectrum's horrible for their broadband. But that's neither here nor there. My thought's been, like, how... how can you sustain this growth, right? We're this year alone, we're getting, if I remember right now, I know you guys will correct me when I'm wrong, and I didn't say if, I said when. We got Iron Fist. We're getting Defenders. I think we're getting one other Marvel series this year, right? And Punisher coming out in the fall, late maybe winterish.
Yeah.
So that alone, they're spending a ton of money on. Then you got all these other.
They currently have over 50 original shows on there.
Is that counting their stand up series, which is phenomenal, by the way? Their stand up comedy
series.
That's
just the number that's being given out.
It's just a number. Okay, let's just take that. At millions of dollars, presumably.
They have 104 million subscribers worldwide.
Yeah.
Well, see, now here's the other thing, though. Here's a really key aspect to this conversation, right? They have been very slow to roll out in foreign markets. Like, I remember a couple years ago, some of you folks who are FTH fans will remember our friend of the show, Nikolai, who lived in Romania at the time because he's Romanian. He was always frustrated because he was like, I can't watch any of the Marvel stuff because we don't have Netflix here. There's no way for me to legally get Netflix in my country. And there's lots of countries that are like that, like in Europe. And, you know, we're not talking like, you know, the middle of like sub-Saharan Africa. We're talking about like civilized Western
China, you know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then Asia, obviously, you know, Asian markets are kind of unique in their own way, too.
Right.
And so, you know, their Netflix is starting to roll out into these markets. So if they can successfully tap in to these foreign markets, they have nothing but potential growth. You know, 104 million subscribers is a lot. But that's nothing compared to the what we're up to 7-8 billion people on this planet, I believe. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of potential out there. Mm-hmm. Even if you only talk about the portion of the population of this planet that are going to consume media like this. And especially as prices go up on, like you were talking about, you know, prices go up and quality goes down from cable providers, mm-hmm. you know, competing services, you know, their quality's all over. Hulu's doing a pretty bang up job so far as well. They've grabbed a lot of original programming, and their ability to grab a lot of current run shows has been pretty mm-hmm. strong. But I almost feel like there's room in the market for the two different services to do their two different things. You know, Netflix to become the new HBO, basically, and then Hulu to be like your regular network TV, almost in a way. But yeah, there's a lot of room in the market for that. So this is kind of it's a sketchy proposition because they are borrowing like crazy. I mean, that's a lot of debt to rack up, and a lot of it is $15.7 billion of it is short term. You know, so that's stuff that they have to start paying back.
And my question is, what you're touching on, my ultimate question has been, how many subscribers do you have to sustain your costs? Right? Because we know they're not going to pay $15 billion back right now. They're going to pay, let's say, $100 million. Let's say $100 million a year they'll pay back because it's over time, mm-hmm. right? But how many, what's your subscriber base that you have and what growth do you have to make profits? Because technically they're profitable because you don't count debt against the profit, against the cost. It's a weird thing businesses do, but I've always been worried about it going, holy crap, let's get more people subscribing because I love what they're doing, but Jesus, I hope they don't go out of business.
Well, there's some wonderful charts in this LA Times business article that I'm reading about it. Here's a thing to consider. In 2013, they had less than 40 million subscribers. Here in 2017, this is 4 years later, roughly, they're looking at 104 million subscribers.
Around the world.
Yeah. That's in less than 5 years, they have more than doubled their subscriber base. And like I said, 104 million is not a lot. Now, I'm sure this number fluctuates to some degree. The chart that's shown here year over year has shown nothing but growth. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's almost, you know, just a straight up line. You know what I mean? Like the edge of, if you have a 90 degree angle in a triangle, it's almost like the opposite side there, where it's just going straight, straight, straight. You know what I mean? But that will plateau at some point. But we, you know, you've got, I'm sure, banksters who are involved in approving these loans and everything are looking at that long-term, you know, growth curve, what their potential is. I'm sure that we're talking about hundreds of millions of potential customers out there still. And there's no signs that the market is going to close up on them because they're offering, I mean, they have so many shows and they hit every kind of person that could possibly want to watch something. You know what I mean? I mean, you've got the Marvel, you've got tons of like the comic book stuff, you've got sci-fi, like Stranger Things, huge success. Now, the other thing is, one of the articles I read talked about that they have had a number of failed shows, but they're pretty quick to cancel those and just get them, you know, get them out the way.
Yeah.
So they're not writing out shows that are underperforming either. If a show flops, it flops, and it's gone, you know? And I also think that they're pretty well positioned to pick up things that get dropped by traditional networks. I mean, we've seen a little bit of that happen with some of the streaming services, but like, you know, a show like Community, for example, it also, you know, them getting picked up by, I think Hulu picked them up.
Yahoo picked them up.
Oh, Yahoo picked them up. I don't.
It's the only time I ever went to Yahoo for anything because Community went there.
Right. And that ultimately didn't end up working out, but.
Because it's Yahoo, I'm sorry.
Right. I mean, it was the wrong, you know, it was the wrong entity to grab them. If Netflix or Hulu had grabbed them and supported them, there's every chance, you know, that, I mean, look at Rick and Morty. They're different shows, but they're the same guy at the core of them, you know, the same creator. And he walks away from Community and Rick and Morty is a smash success. You know what I mean? So if you empower the right creative people to create, you know, their content and you give them the platform, there's all kinds of growth potential there. So I don't think they're going to implode anytime soon. The bubble might burst and they might have to really get that spending under control. But, you know, there's a lot.
I think it would just take all right, we've been pushing growth. We've been pushing a lot of new shows. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to whittle it down a little bit. We're not making any new shows like, before Stranger Things came out, it was Marvel stuff and other things, and Stranger Things would be the new show, right? Not, that's what I'm talking about, like new franchises, if you will. We're not going to do that. We're going to get it under control, but we're going to continue to maybe do two Marvel series a year instead of four. And if the bubble bursts, is what I'm saying. I see that they have probably a contingency plan to say, oh, no, we can stop the growth. We can stop the spending, and we'll still be fine for X amount of years. Because people will still come to see what we have. I foresee, this is what I want. I don't necessarily foresee it, but this is what I hope happens, is that as cable and satellite dwindle, I mean, DirecTV Now had to come out, and that's their streaming service that you can watch. You don't have to have a satellite at your house. If you subscribe to DirecTV Now, you can watch their shows and their packages and whatever on your tablet, on your go, you know, on the go, blah, 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 because they were losing billions of dollars from people like me and went, I'm not paying $100-something a freaking month for you to raise it next month and still give me crap channels that I don't. Yeah, you give me 500 channels, I watch five of them because you don't give me the ones I want because I have to pay more for that.
Yep.
You know, when I can go to Hulu and I can go to Netflix for, my God, dude, I cut the cord 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, and went from $70 a month to, at the time, Hulu was $7 a month, and my Netflix streaming was $7 a month. So I went to $14 a month, plus whatever I paid for the DVDs. Mm-hmm. Now I pay $25 for Netflix, and I pay the max for Hulu minus live TV, which, by the way, if you're not aware and you want live TV, Hulu is getting into that arena and offering a larger package to get live TV through Hulu. Plus, they've got partnerships with Showtime and HBO as well. You can do that. But I pay the max to get no ads, which is still not fully no ads, but it's mostly no ads, $12 a month. So I'm at a grand total of less than $40 a month, right? Or let's say around $40 a month. Still not even touching what cable or satellite would charge me for the shows that I want to watch. You know, so what I want to see is, as that bubble dwindles for cable and satellite, to see those channels like NBC who make okay shows, and Fox who makes decent shows, and FX. I mean, everybody has their niche, right? Mm-hmm. So some people love NBC shows. I'll go ahead and admit I'm looking forward to seeing this Will and Grace come back. You know, I ate that up when I was in college. I might not like it now because I'm in a different point in life. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to see those characters come back. Roseanne, I'm excited to see those characters come back because I grew up with that. Again, it might not hold up, but I'm excited. I'd like to see them partner with places like Hulu and Netflix, which I think Hulu is doing the Roseanne. I'm not sure who's doing that. But you know what I'm saying? Instead of going, CBS, Star Trek, Discovery, we're going to do it on TV, and then we're putting it behind our own paywall. Well, what I'd really like you to see you do is partner with Netflix to say we're going to put it on TV, and then it's going to be on Netflix right after the season's over. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to be on Hulu the next day. And they're going to pay you the money, the $6, $8 per user or whatever. It's not going to be that much.
Yeah, I mean, that's just old media companies not willing to embrace the future.
Yeah. Well, so I guess what I'm saying is I want them to embrace the future.
Like, cable could have saved themselves a whole lot of heartache years ago if they would have just done a la carte programming for people. Let me pick the channels that I want. Even if I understand to a certain degree they're going to have to do some sort of package work. But if you give the subscriber more control over the channels that they have and the amount that they're paying for it, you would have avoided losing so many customers within the last, you know, 5-10 years.
But, well, you know, the thing is, I worked for a cable company and I worked in customer service and I got to see people's billing. And let me tell you, their whole industry is predicated on people paying for stuff that they don't use, getting packages and stuff that they don't pay attention to. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to criticize the industry because they're pretty predatory in what they do. They get particularly like ignorant people, like old people who don't really know what's going on. They sign them up for these crazy packages and, you know, they get them the full bang. Oh, we'll get you high speed internet, your cable, you know, your phone. Oh, we're going to get you home security and everything too. Mm-hmm. And then you look at these bills and these people are paying $300-$400 a month.
Mm-hmm.
For their service through their cable provider. And even just people who like try to get bare bones, it's like they come in and they're like, why am I paying $60, $70, $80 for basic cable and, you know, the one sports channel I want to watch or whatever. It's like, well, you got to have the whole package. Their whole business model is not as far from a la carte as humanly possible. They want to sell you mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff that you're never going to use. And so, of course, they're going to be dug in against an industry that is focused on charging you very little money to let you pick and choose and get the maximum value. I mean, come on. A Netflix subscription. If you watch 8 hours of something on Netflix a month, you've more than paid for it. You know what I mean? Like, for value wise, like, you know, you could have the lowest, you know, minimum wage job in the land and still justify, you know, the value of your time versus that, you know, mm-hmm. and then it only gets up there, you know what I mean? Like, when you start talking about being higher income and stuff, you're like, oh, yeah, Netflix is the best deal ever because it's, you know, I make that in 5 minutes, you know, and it's like, so that's the whole thing is it's like, it's a really good deal. There's probably even some pricing room. You know what I mean? In the market for the price to go up, because it's going to. You know that these subscription prices are going to kind of tick up a little bit. I just think that they're pretty cognizant of the fact that they can't get to traditional cable level or satellite level without the market being like, no, like, you're just more the same at this point. But, you know, a real linchpin in this whole conversation is net neutrality. Because if we lose net neutrality, that could, I mean, that's a real scary thing for Netflix. You know, you want to talk about all that debt that they're sitting on. Mm-hmm. If, you know, somebody like a Spectrum or a, I'm trying to think of the one out west, any of the cable companies, you know, the two or three big ones in this country, if any Cox, the other one I was thinking of, Comcast, that's what, any of those three, if they get the ability to lean on Netflix. And we just saw this. Verizon just admitted. They had to admit mm-hmm. because it got brought up that they were throttling against Netflix. And they had to acknowledge that. They're going to get sued. You know what I mean? They're going to have to pay out in fines and such and in settlements. You know what I mean? Because they throttled people's access to Netflix. They're already doing it, and the net neutrality hasn't even been smashed to bits yet. It's close. You know what I mean? So that's a whole another thing. You know what I mean? There's a lot of I would be real scared if I worked at Netflix just every time those bills come into Congress being like,
Oh, yeah. You know, they're fighting it. But here's the thing with that is, God, it'd be so detrimental for business overall, because here's what's going to happen. We lose net neutrality. All of a sudden, Netflix gets choked to death. What are they going to do? They're going to lay off all the employees they have, so everybody loses their job. They're going to file bankruptcy, so the banks never get that money back. It just disappears, and the banks have to eat it. And that means we, the consumer, has to eat it because it's our money that they're lending to them, and it causes bigger problems in the economy and everything else just because companies want to strangle them. Because it's just bad.
It's not just the people who work for Netflix. Netflix pays for 50 television shows to get produced. That's thousands, tens of thousands of people who are working in the, you know, the production industry, making television shows and films, that are going to suddenly lose the funding for their shows. You know what I mean? Their work. And actors and actresses too. You know what I mean? They're going to have projects fall out from underneath them, you know? So yeah, you're talking about, and it's not going to be just Netflix and just who, you know, any of these streaming services. It's going to be like everything on the net if net neutrality gets blown up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, you're going to see chaos. It's going to be blood in the streets fiscally in regards to what, you know, the fallout of some of this, which is why I think it's really important that, you know, our leaders here in the United States be cognizant of that and like, hey, yeah, I like you putting money into my pocket right now, traditional distribution models, but like, the thing is, you know, we could seriously potentially collapse a whole corner of our economy if we're not careful about this. So maybe you should just go sit quietly in the corner is my take on it. It's like, you know, because it's what the cable companies and satellite companies want is reckless in the grand scheme of things. You know what I mean? We're 20 years into a cycle of, you know, innovation and ingenuity based on the internet being available to everybody and internet speeds being largely consistent, you know what I mean, depending on market. So it's a real scary thing, and yeah, it'd be catastrophic. I don't know that it would topple the national or international economy, you know what I mean, but it would be one of those things that would put a lot of pressure on a lot of different things all of a sudden.
It would change our life as we know it. I'm not saying it's like an apocalypse or anything, but it would be a bend in history where we go, nope, that's where everything changed right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, much like the end of World War II, I think, when they did United Nations and the World Bank and all that. I'm not super strong in history, but I think that's when it was after the Second World War. Could have been between the first and second, but it doesn't really matter. What I'm saying is we can point back to history and say, no, there's a bend in how the world worked right there. Mm-hmm. And that's what this will be if it happens, because that is our world. It is internet. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can look at something like World War II as a paradigm shift, and this would be something similar to that, like where it would
completely... Without the outright violence to start with, anyway.
Not necessarily, yeah. But it would still be, you know... Well, it's just like the rise of the internet. You know, that's also a paradigm shift.
Yes.
We just talked about a number of businesses that just disappeared over the last two decades because this technology exists, you know? And it's only getting worse. You know, how many department stores are closed? You know, they're closing up shop left and right, you know, because it's increasingly difficult for them to compete with the likes of Amazon and other online shopping outlets. But
yeah. But that's that. I like it. I like the discussion. Chris, you got any last things to throw in before we get out of here, sir?
On a topic or?
Yeah. Oh, no, on a topic. Yeah. On the topic.
No. The only thing that I've wondered in probably in the last 5 years, if it goes back to the subscription question, how many subscriptions does Netflix need to stay solvent? Is I've never understood why they don't open up more. Like, I understand the argument for, you know, these regions of the world they've identified as more prone to pirating and whatever. The problem with that is the people that are in those regions are already pirating your stuff. So you going wide into Romania or you going wide into the Middle East isn't going to reduce the number of pirates. They're already getting your stuff. They already have the VPNs to get your stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're doing nothing but stopping yourself from making money. But I wonder when you talk about this debt that they have because of the production houses and stuff now, or their production house, I wonder how much of that is just an infrastructure worry that because it's going to require much, you know, a lot more servers, a lot more storage space. And I'm assuming that they're going to have to go you know, overseas with a lot of these hubs that they would have to do.
Mm-hmm. I think there's regulatory concerns as well with I know that's the big issue with China, you know, Anytime you try to roll anything out in China, that goes for, you know, movies, TV, video games, you know, any of that kind of stuff. They run into all kinds of regulatory concerns, a lot of barriers.
Yeah. Yeah. As we talk about this, we're talking about on the big scale, but I wonder on the little scale what it would do to podcasting and to new media with all the YouTube stuff and not necessarily Netflix crashing, but net neutrality, you know. It's what we're building our careers on and our incomes on and everything else. And I mean, if the world tells us anything, the great historical document, what is it? God, I lost it too. Crap. It's Christian Slater, Pirate Radio.
Oh, Pump Up the Jam.
Pump Up the Jam. If the great historical documentary of Pump Up the Jam has taught us anything, is that there will always be people with voices out there to put them out. So, Chris, since Bot shows you so much love and you are their highest and best patron, and they love you for it, why don't you tell us a little bit about that on our Giant Size Team Up Network?
That Pilot Duke? I mean, it's okay. You know,
go with the hard sell, man. Go with the hard sell.
The best part about Botched is, you know, when you get like a brand new game and I know, Paul, you're probably the guy that reads the rules and breaks. I'm the guy that just wants to play the game. I ain't got time to read all the rules, so I try to find somebody. But sometimes I get stuck in a game with a bunch of guys that don't want to read the rules. We're just like, well, let's just wing this shit. Let's just go. That's what Botched provides, but they still managed to even screw that up. And I love it. I love it so much because they have okay-ish personalities, I guess is probably the best way to put that. They're not horrible human beings, but they're not exactly good either. These are guys that you wouldn't mind seeing get kicked out of an IHOP, but you wouldn't want to hang out with them. That's about it.
Basically, every time I stop listening to an episode of Botched, it's like I just relieved myself. and it's like suddenly there's fulfillment in my body and soul that wasn't there before because I'm done with that experience.
I look forward to it every week. It is my friends getting me through my long rides, man. I don't play D&D. I've gotten a chance to play with them since I've been listening to the show, and it's a great game. But I've never been a fan of it because I wasn't introduced to it as a kid. So they fit my style. Absolutely. I don't know the rules. I know you roll some dice and stuff happens. And they're fun guys. And you know what? You keep crapping on Chris Wisdom because obviously he deserves it. I'm just saying. So go, you know, I really don't know if that made anybody want to go listen to this show or not. But go check out Botch.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Go check out Botch. Botch is good stuff. I mean, if you got time for that. Last I knew, ain't nobody got time for that. But check them out. They're good. That's good.
Oh, well, you can help us out by going over to giantsizeteamup.com/support. There is everything you need for all the shows. You can follow us on our email, or you can email us rather, not follow us on email, because that's really weird. I'm glad that doesn't happen. But you can email us, follow us on Facebook, Twitter. We've got a Patreon there, PayPal, all that jazz. If you'd like to have your words on the show, it is btp@giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to get your emails, and we'll read them out. And we'll tell you how wrong you are, like they do me every single week. But we will absolutely enjoy reading them in the process. Tune in next week to hear Chris say,
you know, last weekend was not that great, but at least I wasn't at Fandom Fest.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.